Hey, everybody, it's Paul Yeager, and this is the MTOM Show podcast. Welcome in to this edition where we are going to put father and son on the same side of the camera, put a couple microphones in, and hear what one has to say to the other. One happens to be Tim Bennett, and you're like, Matt Bennett. Matt Bennett's dad. Matt Bennett, one of our regular market analysts. Tim's been watching the show longer than Matt's been alive, or almost the same amount of time, and Tim started watching it to get advice to help on his Illinois farm. And Matt, well, he remembers watching it as a young lad, maybe 10, watches it, and now he's a part of it. But what does it take to work with each other when it comes to farming? Everybody has their own formula, and we're going to get into how theirs has worked, but also how one has helped the other and vice versa. It's not always the same way that you think it's going to be. If you have feedback for me, markettomarket@iowapbs.org. If you have a guest idea or maybe somebody you think we should talk to or a topic we should cover, I enjoy all these conversations, and I thank you for allowing us to spend part of your time as we approach Father's Day. A little bit of father and son time here. Matthew Bennett and his father, Tim. Tim, at what point did young Matt not go away from the farm? Like, he's begging to be a part of things. Was there ever an age where he was begging to be a part of things, or did you just basically, when he could walk, you put him to work?
Pretty much. You know, he used to go with me all the time. I remember when he was a little bitty shaver, I made him a bed behind the combine seat, and he would ride with me in the combine.
And that was last year?
Yeah, pretty much.
Did you always think that, give me a little bit of a rundown of the family. Where's Matt fit in with the kids here?
Well, he's the only kid right now. We had a daughter and she passed in 2003, so he's the only one. But we always probably figured he would come back, and which he did. And when he was in school, he would come back and help a lot because he's only 60 miles away. So he used to come home and drive for me once in a while at night. Which gave me a little break, but when we was in the elevator. So he's always been around.
Did you intentionally send him away, or did he kind of go away on his own with the thought he might return?
No, he wanted to, you know, get his schooling. He went to, he started out at school in Decatur, and then he went to Lakeland, and then he finished up at U of I in Champaign.
Matt, is this all accurate? Is this the way you remember it?
Yeah, it's the way I remember it. I wanted to end up getting a degree in ag econ is kind of the direction I wanted to head. And so, I did judge livestock at Lakeland and then ended up going to the University of Illinois. I didn't want to judge livestock there because at the community college level, you would get a scholarship, tuition waiver. You know, and the time allotted to judging livestock was fairly intense. So when I went to the U of I and they wanted me to judge, I asked what kind of scholarship we could get, and they said, you don't get a scholarship. So I said, I think I'll just focus on, I'm going to say I focused on studies. We'll leave it there.
Oh, that sounds like there's some room to find out. Tim, do you think he focused on his studies?
Probably not 100% of the time.
Matt, at what point did you know that you wanted to come back?
Pretty early on. I mean, I enjoyed farming from the get-go, you know, and I started with a small tract of ground. Actually, as I was finishing up high school, I got lucky and rented 53 acres off of a lady that, was looking for somebody, and I got very fortunate there. So, you know, I think throughout college, I realized there was a little bit of money. I could make a little bit of money farming. Now, at the time, it was the early 90s. You know, we were just coming out of a pretty rough go. But quite frankly, my first year was 91. And right here in Central Illinois, 91, 2, 3, and 4 were fantastic years. And that kind of spoiled me a bit. So, you know, my parents kept telling me, don't think this is going to continue. And they were right. It did not continue. But I enjoyed it. So throughout college, I would come home, you know, as much as what I possibly could. Probably more than maybe what I should have, you know, but regardless, it worked out. Actually, my son, you know, is in that situation now, so he's going to head off to Kansas State, and I'm kind of glad about that because he's going to get a chance to get away and find out what's going on outside of this zip code and, you know, basically figure some things out on his own.
Tim, is that the same speech you gave?
Pretty much.
So you were in the service. Was there college in your past or background?
Yeah, I went to down to Southern for a year, and then I got drafted, and then I went to Lakeland, which was a two-year, same Lakeland he went to. I got out of there, and I was ready to go farming. I was picking up a little bit more ground, and, you know, as far as I wanted to go. To go any further, I'd had to drive quite a ways, so I said, that's enough, so... Wasn't important back then as it is now.
What was your entry into before college? I mean, was there people farming in your family before you?
Well, yeah, we go, the farm that Matthew lives on is, I think it's been in our family right at 150 years, right?
A little more, actually, yeah.
A little more, and so my granddad, my granddad's both farmed, and then my dad did some, but he done other things too. So it's pretty much been in the family.
How easy is it to work with family? I'm sorry. I'm using the word easy. Is it easy to work with family?
Is that for me or for?
Yeah, you can. Well, you're both going to have to answer it at some point. But Tim, I'll start.
Well, yeah, it's not bad. We get along a lot better than we used to, but, you know, he gets some wild ideas, and so do I, as far as that goes. That works both ways, but at the end of the day, we get along pretty well.
Where are the agreements at?
We don't really have an agreement. We just, he's got his land, and he farms, and I've got mine, and then we share the equipment, and share the bills and on a percentage basis, and right now it's working real well.
Was that something that you had set up intentionally that way?
Well, pretty much. My wife, she does a lot of that, and, you know, she's the one that suggested a lot of it. And so, like the fuel man, when he sends a bill, he knows what percent to send Matthew, and he knows what percent to send me, and so it's worked real well.
Well, has it, Matt? Has it worked well?
Yeah, it has worked pretty well. You know, the thing is, whenever I first started, you know, I think they were easy enough on me, but at the same time, you know, I had to pay for some equipment and pay for some things. I thought I was just going to really make a ton of money right off the bat. And then, you know, they said, now hold on a second here. You know, let's look at some other stuff as far as costs were concerned. But that was really good for me because it forced me to understand, you know, what it was going to take to be able to make things work. So as time has gone on, we have shifted, you know, what the percentages were based upon the farm ground I was covering and the farm ground he was covering. So, you know, it's been a plan that's worked really well. And I think, you know, as far as, like, for instance, equipment has gone, I think it's going to make it a little bit easier, you know, to buy things out, you know, one of these days when Dad wants to continue to pull back a little bit. But at the time, I've said, you know what, it's farm as long as what he wants to. I've got other stuff going on too, so we're able to make things work and keep things you know, pretty fluid and not run into any big issues.
So Tim, did do you still do the marketing, or do you let Matt think he knows what he's doing and do the marketing?
No, I do my own. He does his.
Where do you get your
information? I take his advice once in a while. But
what's that?
I take his advice once in a while, but for the most part, you know, if you watch Market to Market, you can hear all those experts, so you know how to market things.
Do you ever tell him that, hey, I heard Ted Seifert said I should maybe look to sell right now? Do you ever tell him that?
As a matter of fact, yes, I have. And Naomi and some of those.
Oh, you brought the Naomi word up. I was waiting on that one for a moment, but let's go there now. You've been watching the show for a long time. Is that true, Tim? When did you start watching?
With Chet Randolph, wasn't it?
Yeah.
The guy that started it. Yeah.
And so how did you come about the show?
Oh, it's, you know, when we were in the elevator, and even before then, everybody watched Market to Market. I mean, that was just a Sunday thing. You come home from church, and you get on Market to Market and watch it. So I know pretty well all of them. That was I can't remember all their names, but you're the, you know, the most recent, of course. But, yeah, I remember them all.
There's been a few of us that have sat there and asked questions. Who's been your favorite analyst over the years?
Well, that's kind of a loaded question. I like always liked Sue Martin, Beans and the Teens, and I'm a $13 girl and all that stuff. And then I like Naomi, and I mean, I like them all. You don't have any real bad ones in my book. They're all good, and they all have a different perspective. And it's, your four-person thing that you've done, I really enjoy that because it's kind of neat to see how everyone's opinion jives with the others, but that's a good segment. I like that.
The panels are interesting. That's for certain. They're Matt. They're kind of hard to they're hard to participate in, but they're also kind of fun. At least they are from my standpoint. I don't know about how you feel about it.
Yeah, I mean, I enjoy being on the panel. It's a good time to, you know, not only see who agrees and what they agree on, but where the disagreements lie. And I think it just goes to show you that any of these discussions that we have, sometimes you can learn a little bit if you listen sometimes, too. So I enjoy the panel discussions. I usually come in knowing pretty much what I have to say and how I feel about things. But if I don't walk away at least questioning the way that I came in, then I feel like maybe I didn't listen well enough. Because, you know, whether it's Naomi or Ted or Elaine or Dawn, I mean, there's a lot of knowledge in that room together, and there's a lot of experience. And so I feel like we've done a pretty good job being able to play off one another, first of all, and second of all, be able to work pretty well together.
When did you first start watching Market to Market?
Oh, you know, started watching Market to Market probably whenever I was, before I was 10 years old, I'm sure. We would come home again, you know, from church, and I remember as a kid that, you know, that's what we watched, you know, and then after that it was the McLaughlin Group, I think was the name of the show, where they sat around and argued the whole time, you know, but I remember those things vividly. But you know, it. I remember there's times, you know, when my dad would have like a board meeting or something, and if my mom went home, it was her job to watch Market to Market, you know, and let everybody know what was said. But I don't know. It was fun to watch. I mean, Sue was always, you know, someone that was pretty popular on the show, you know, and so the guys in our neck of the woods wanted to have her for a meeting at some point. I don't remember how old I was, probably 15 or so, but we had her actually in Windsor, you know, for a meeting, and we'd typically get, we'd do these Outlook meetings, you know, like with the University of Illinois, WILL would do Outlook meetings, and so we kind of partnered up with them a few times, and, you know, you might get 100 people if you were lucky, but when Sue showed up, we had 300 or 400 people pack the house, so it was quite a deal, and it's something I never have forgotten.
So, Tim, you've met Sue in person. Have you met any of the other analysts in person?
Yeah, quite a few over the years. I can't begin to name them all, but yeah, you know, Farm Progress Show, there's been some there, and of course that's where I met Ty or Tyne, and
Chip Flory, and
Chip was, I've met him.
People I've been on with different things, so.
And that's, you know, that's the thing, you know, there's other organizations that do the same thing. What does a show, I mean, what does that market analysis mean to you? I mean, because is it gospel or is it just supplemental text for what you're trying to do for decisions?
Well, I think it's supplemental. I mean, you, don't get me wrong. There's been times on Sunday they said, you know, Corn's going to do this or that, and I didn't listen. And then I find out, hey, I should have paid attention, you know. So you've had so many experts over the years, but I just, it's, you know, it just gives you another thing to think about, and may be completely different than what you're thinking, but it's good to hear, and just have to weigh it and see which way you want to go.
Matt, how did you tell your dad that you were going to be on the show the first time?
I don't remember how. I think I just, once I found out you guys were going to give me a chance to come in and, you know, see how it was going to go the first time, I went and told he and my mom about it. I said, hey, I think I finally gotten to that point where you get to see me on Market to Market, because, you know, it was kind of always the show. It was the first one that I was ever aware of. It was the one that I knew he always watched without fail. And so, whenever I got to tell him that, they thought that was pretty neat, too. But I told him that, you know, you guys said, hey, make sure you come on here with an opinion and make sure that you don't be too wishy-washy. We'll give you a couple of good shots at this and see if people want to see you back. So I've sure appreciated every chance I've gotten to come on.
Tim, what was that like when he said he was going to come on?
That's pretty neat. You know, it's you got somebody you know out there on TV. We see it a lot now. We go to Florida in the winter, and a lot of times I'll watch, you know, Ag Day, and sometimes he's on there. He never calls and tells us whether he's going to be on there or not, But anyway, Market to Market was one of the big ones, and I enjoy my Market to Market coffee cup that I have, too.
Really? I'm trying to remember if it was... Hold on, that's probably going to fall on me now. Was it this one, or is it...
Yes.
Okay, I think I remember sending one home. He said he was going to give it to you, Tim, but These new guys, they're always trying something. I was afraid it was going to show up on eBay or something.
No, he did. He gave it to me right away.
When it's father-son, I mean, that is something, or father-daughter, we're seeing more and more now, or, you know, the family involvement. Is that more than half of what agriculture is sometimes? It's the family side of things?
Well, I think it's a big part of it. I mean, granted, you know, things are pretty tough most of the time, so you've got to think of the financial side of it. But on the other side of it, you know, the family means a lot. And, you know, your grandsons and come out, and that's how Bo, he's now getting ready to go to college, but he come out as a young man and start driving tractors. We got pictures of him pretty small, so... It's a good feeling to have family coming around, and the girls bring lunch, and, you know, we do all that kind of stuff. So my wife's been laid up this year, so she didn't get to help, but we missed her, and I think she missed bringing it out too. So,
and Matt, your kids, I mean, you've kind of got you've kind of got the older wave and the younger wave of kids. I mean, are you kind of thinking that same thing of let them loose and whoever comes back, comes back? I mean, you mentioned one going to Kansas State already, sorry.
Right, yeah. So the oldest actually is in Alaska right now. She's married in Alaska, and I think her chances of coming back to the farm are somewhere between slim and none, but she appreciates it. She loves where she grew up, you know, and it's just she kind of wanted to get out and do her thing. Her husband's in the Army, and they've got a great thing going. But then my oldest son, you know, he's 20, very interested in farming. He's had a beef business the last couple, 3 years. He's sold a lot of beef, and he's kind of learned how a business works, you know, and wanted to get involved in the farm. He's heard stories about me starting whenever I was 18 years old, you know, and then buying my first piece of ground when I was 19, and I paid $2,625 an acre for my first 40, you know, and he was wondering if he could find a piece of ground for that kind of money. But he knows things have changed significantly. So, you know, what I've told him is just to look around. You know, he's been around with me whenever I've been out speaking, and I talk a lot with producers about, you know, being diversified, maybe having some other income streams, because, you know, as you know, Paul, the last 5 or 6 years before this little run up the last few months, the last 5 or 6 years were just pretty darn tight. And so having some diversification and some other income has helped those producers be able to stay healthy. So I've told him all along, I fully expect you to get a degree. I fully expect you to have the ability to do some other things as well. And then if you can become a part of the farm, I think the main message for me is make the farm healthier instead of pulling out of the farm, you know, because the tough times, there's just not much left to pull out.
So then when it strikes well, and you just have to take advantage of it. In fact, Matt, I remember the first time we even talked, you mentioned cost of production. You've got to know what your cost of production is. Where did that advice come from?
Well, you know, I remember talking to my dad in 2012 time frame, you know, whenever we had $8 corn. I was starting to do a fair amount of speaking, and, you know, he'd said, you know, this is going to turn, because we just bought a piece of ground. he said, this is going to look horrible here before too long, you know. Yeah, we all need to be being smarter, better businessmen. You know, if you want to do well on the speaking thing, that's a good focus, you know, is just getting better at what you're doing before things turn. And so I tried to really hammer on that pretty hard. And what I found is a lot of producers, even in like the 2013-14 timeframe, you know, they really didn't know their cost of production, but they just exited an era where they didn't need to know. And I hate to say it that way. It's just that we got away with a lot of what I would say less than stellar marketing because we had so many opportunities throughout the year. And so I've hit that pretty hard the last several years, just becoming a better businessman or businesswoman and understanding your break-evens, your cost of production, maximizing your return on investment, if you will, on the farm, because that certainly has paid off big dividends here over the last few years.
Tim, when you've seen somebody around you fail or go out and move on, you know, what was some of their challenges, and what was it that you learned from those challenges to maybe use yourself or to pass on to others?
Well, it's been a long time since we've had that happen around here. That was back in the 80s, you know. There was quite a shakeout then, and I remember some of us were with the PCA, that's what it was called then, and they got nervous and they started shaking, and a lot of people dropped out because of that, and some of us survived and still going. But anyway, yeah, I've been through that, and I know what it's like. And we if it hadn't been for a bank picking me up, I would have been probably one of the casualties. But anyway, I just know that, you know, good times don't last very long, and you got to take advantage of them when you get a chance. And right now we've got a chance, and I haven't got probably near enough sold for this fall, but I still say we gotta give this, see what this weather's going to do. It's a little bit early yet, I think. But
I thought Naomi said sell some of the fall, but maybe you just didn't take her advice. I don't know.
She did, and she even gave the percentage. I want to say it wasn't that high a percentage, but I don't remember for sure.
Right, I know. And that's the thing about all of this, is you don't know. And do you have any idea? I mean, I asked my father this years ago, and I was lucky enough to at least get an answer before he passed. I said, you know, why did you make it out of the 80s? Why'd you make it out of the 80s?
Well, a lot of help, a lot of prayer, I think, more than anything. We, you know, we had to do some rearranging and adjusting, and well, we didn't have to sell anything, but, you know, if things hadn't turned when they had, there would have been a lot more people in trouble, because it was getting pretty serious. But I'm glad those days are over, and I hope I never see them again.
Matt, when you think of right now, I mean, we've already had a $1.50, almost $2 scene come out of a couple of these markets in just a short amount of time. Do you feel that folks have a better sense of, I better not get too out in front of my skis because I remember 08 and it can change, or 12 and it can change? Have we learned even from modern times, let alone having to go back to the 80s?
You know, the easy answer to that is no, in a lot of cases. And the reason why I say that, and I don't want to be too hard on anybody, but, you know, when you get a phone call, you know, that I don't want to sell after a 75-cent drop in the market, and you're sitting here staring $5.50 corn in the face at the time, that makes me, you know, a little on edge. And I usually would tell that person I'm talking to on the phone, do you not realize what kind of money you can make at 550 basis the board? You know, first of all. And so do you want to get too far out, like you say? You know, do you want to get oversold? Well, that's where there's so many tools these days that producers can use, you know, that Ted, Naomi, and I, all of us talk about on a regular basis, Sue, you name it. But, you know, you can get some sales on the books, lock in some worst-case scenarios, and guess what? If the market takes off and skyrockets because maybe we do get dry in the Western Corn Belt. You know, if that's the case, then I'm going to be able to participate. And so, you know, you've got to be careful, in my opinion, as a producer, to be so afraid to make a sale that you let really profitable sales go by. You got to balance that with, I don't want to get oversold, you know. So it's definitely a dance that you've got to go through. But certainly, as I said, if a producer doesn't feel comfortable with it, there's so many good people out there, you know, that are able to help navigate that, those waters, because it's definitely one thing I say is that the higher the prices are, you know, the harder it is to market sometimes, because you've got more money on the table. And so don't feel bad about having angst about making sales. But at the same time, you know, again, figure your profit margins. What kind of money do you make at 550 corn? Because I can guarantee you, since 2012, none of us have made that kind of profit margin, you know, just at normal yields.
Tim, when you hear Matt talk like that, what do you, are you like, I'm proud of him, or I taught him all that, he's just repeating everything I told him, or?
No, I'm one of the guys he's talking about that gets scared a little bit sometimes making those sales. But yeah, he's, you know, he's studied his lesson and he's done well, you know, with his cost of production, know what your costs are, and, you know, go accordingly and lock it in, because like I say, you're not probably going to get very many chances. This won't last forever.
All right, so Tim, do you make phone calls to Matt about grain maybe on a Wednesday and in the afternoon after you see the close and go, well, we bought some of it back, should I, you know, do you call him for advice?
Oh yeah, I have, but he's so hard to get a hold of anymore. You about got to wait till he goes home before I can find out anything.
So he does take your call?
Well, yeah, if he's off, but most of the time he's on the phone. You come in here at 7:30 in the morning, he's on the phone. You say, very seldom. Of course, when you walk in his office and he goes like that, holds a finger up, you know he's in a conversation with somebody. So
it's not a bad finger either, Paul. I don't know
I
if the camera caught
the
that. That's why I was making sure we knew. It's 1 minute. It's not the number one. So.
Yeah.
That's the livestock finger right there. You just bought a lot of cattle right there with that finger, with that wave. But he doesn't charge you, does he? Does he bill you like a lawyer does?
I don't know if he does or not, to be honest with you. I think he does. So
he takes an extra piece of prime rib at Christmas from you.
Yeah, well, he raises the prime rib, so.
Matt, has there ever been a question you wanted to ask your dad, and you know, now that we're rolling and you want to embarrass him?
Oh, I don't know. Not really. I think whenever we're talking to you and on this show, I guess, you know, one thing I would like to have him tell you or comment on, not only does he have an analyst that he liked a lot over the years, but I want to have him tell you the most imitated analyst in our elevator. Because I will tell you, on Mondays, we would always, especially when this one particular analyst was on, we would have imitations, especially from one producer locally who could do a dead-on impersonation. But I'll let him tell you about it.
Well, it was the livestock fella.
Yeah.
Walt Hackney. We got a guy here that you wouldn't know the difference if you heard him. He could repeat it verbatim. So, he's really good at it. So, but he was always livestock back in those days. They had a livestock and the grain, and of course, but I still listen to it.
You know what, Tim? If you don't know the word of greed, there is just too much of it right now. If you can hang a collar at 45, I think you gotta think about pulling the trigger here. You know, that was one of the things that everybody always talked about was, can you do your Walt Hackney impression? So Walt was one of a kind. So lucky that I was able to talk to him a couple of times and do an interview like this with him. In fact, Matt, I don't know if I've ever told you this. I had a similar setup. Kind of this is where some of the idea came from. I asked Elaine Cubb, because when Virgil Robinson retired, we used to pair Virgil and Walt together, because I've done the booking for years of the guests, and we always kind of, that was the pairing. It worked. And so when Virgil retired, I
we kind of discussed, and I said, you know who I think might like working with Walt? It was Elaine. And I said, Elaine, are you okay with working with Walt? She goes, absolutely. I'll be down there whenever. And she was so excited. I put the two of them in a room and let – she had a whole bunch of questions. And you could say that's the end of the story. But the thing about Walt is, you know, Tim, you talked about you're always trying to learn. Walt was trying to learn until the very end. He was asking Elaine questions. And I think Elaine at one point is like, oh, my gosh. Walt Hackney just asked me a question, my opinion on something. So I always – that I don't know if that story gets told enough or if people know that story. So kudos to you and, you know, Walt for both. Just – it doesn't matter the age. You're always trying to learn.
I agree.
All right. So, Tim, is there any question you want to ask Matt?
Oh, no, not really. I pretty well know what he's thinking all the time, so we don't always agree. But you know, if he hadn't come back, I don't know where I'd be right now because I'm getting a little long in the tooth. It's going to have to quit here one of these days. So,
well, that means he's not going to be able to go on the road as much then.
Well, that's where we need Bo, and then we got another grandson that's in the Army, and he's wanting to come back too. So hopefully we can find a spot for him somewhere.
You think you're going to be able to do that, Matt, or are you going to have to pull him into your office to help him out?
You know, I think that when my son gets home from college, there'll be some opportunities, you know, to work with us in the office as well. But, you know, he does love to farm. And so one thing that, again, that I'm going to encourage him to do is make the farm healthier financially, you know, make the farm better, you know, agronomically. Just make the farm better all the way around. That's part of the reason why he's going to college. And so I do want him to help in this office, but I also want to be able to continue to do what I do. I mean, you know, if you you or Dave get a hold of me and say, hey, we want you to come over to Des Moines or Johnson or whatever, I'm going to say yes 9 times out of 10, unless I just have a conflict I can't get over, because I do enjoy doing it. You know, I get a chance to speak, you know, or at least I got a chance to speak, you know, pre-COVID around the country quite a bit, and I really enjoy it. It gives you a good feel for what's going on out there. You're able to establish some really good friendships and networks that you can lean on heavily, you know, whenever you want to know what's going on out there. So I want to continue to be able to do that, but at the same time, you know, I guess I'm 46 now, and I do still have a couple of fairly young kids, and you can only stretch yourself so thin. So I think once Bo's home, my ability to travel, you know, is going to remain intact, but I want to still be able to be present for the things that are most important, which would be my family.
Or we'll just put you in your office like we are right now. Bring into the show. We've done that a time or two.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, we're actually building a studio right here in my office, so it's going to be a professionally done studio, so to where we won't be you know, if you saw the way that I set up my camera in my computer sometimes with boxes and reams of paper, and it's quite a deal. But we're going to have it a little better to where, you know, if someone calls and says, hey, could you do an interview this afternoon? We can make it look real good, you know, and I don't have to do a lot to make it look good. So we're going to make a little investment there and try to make sure we're prepared and ready, you know, and then we can take some opportunities whenever I do not have the chance to travel.
Tim, I appreciate you letting me interview him.
Yeah, well, that's quite all right.
Thank you for doing this, because I know not everybody likes to sit in front of a computer screen and talk to somebody who's asking them a ridiculous amount of questions.
Yeah. Well, that wasn't bad. One thing I need to add to what he's saying is he's got a guy that helps us, that is, he can plant, he can run the combine, he can do anything, plus work on them. So we're real lucky that we got him, and that lets him get away when he needs to get away, so... works real well. We're lucky to have him.
Good help. You got to pay that person. Keep him there.
He's right. Worth every penny we pay him, too.
Very good. All right, Tim, Matthew, thank you both. Appreciate it, guys.
Well, thank Absolutely. You for having us on.
Thanks for having us.
My thanks to the Bennetts, both Matthew and Tim. Thank you, guys. I appreciate it a ton. That will do it for this installment of the MTOM Show podcast. New episodes each and every Tuesday. You can find them via YouTube or wherever you get your podcasts. Thank you so very much for spending time with us. We'll see you next time.